The Man in Line. Daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio from midday till 1, Monday to Friday.
Faster by, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line today. We're with the Department of Justice and Home Affairs through till 1. So you can get in touch by calling 66 13 60. Text 166 177. WhatsApp 166 177. Or email studio at manxradio.com. Well, the Department of Home Affairs is all about ensuring the safety, protection and security of the Isle of Man. The Minister is Jane Paul Wilson, the Chief Exec is Dan Davis, and they're here with you till 1 today. So, fast am I, Jane Paul Wilson.
Fast am I, Andy.
Good to have you. And Dan Davis as well. Welcome back, Dan.
Fast am I, Andy.
Okay, lots of things concerning the DHA. I remember last time, Jane Paul Wilson, when we covered about 10% of what we wanted to cover about.
I think you're right.
We always run out of time. So the sexual referral centre, what's happening there?
Yes, we received some additional money in this year's budget for 23-24, actually, to make sure that we can actually now progress the build of that. So the sexual assault referral service is already up and running, but what is critical now is to build the dedicated sexual assault referral centre, which will be ultimately a clinically led provision, but it will enable the full provision of up-to-date to the latest standards of forensic capability, as well as support services for victims of sexual assault on the island.
It's fair to say there's been a fair amount of frustration regarding the delay in this happening on the Isle of Man, Dan Davis?
Yeah, I mean, the build and the service, as the Minister said, are separate things. So we've had a full sexual assault referral service on the island now with a qualified forensic medical examiner for the past 2 years, and that's working really well. So victims of sexual assault no longer have to go to the UK for a forensic examination. But the broader picture has slowed down. We had challenges, I think, because of the pandemic and because of supplies from Brexit, but now we've got budget, which we're really grateful to the Treasury for, and hopefully we'll have spades in the ground sort of towards the back end of this year.
I mean, so in layperson's term, what are we able to do now the service is up and running that wasn't there before?
If you're a victim of sexual assault, then you will be seen by a qualified forensic medical examiner who will examine you forensically, and that means that they take evidence from you that can be used in a police prosecution subsequent to that. The change in the future will be that it will be a clinically led service. So the first and foremost concern for people really is for their health and well-being, for their mental and physical support, and they'll be seen by a qualified examiner, and they can then choose whether or not to make a prosecution at that time, or we will be able to preserve evidence in future that will allow people to make a charge in future when they feel more able to make a charge. But the primary purpose of the Sexual Assault Referral Centre, when it's fully up and running, will be to support people. We'll have independent sexual violence advisors who will support people through the process of not only making a charge if they want to make a charge, but also supporting them through the mental and emotional strain of being a victim or a survivor of a sexual assault.
And I mean, Jane Paul Wilson, it's a ghastly subject that we have to talk about. It's in your remit as well. So does the Isle of Man feel a bit more civilised for women in the past 2 years than hitherto?
I think it's really, really important, actually, Andy. I think you're absolutely right. I think if you think about the trauma and the harm that goes with this type of awful offence in the past, the fact that then that's then compounded by having to go off island if you were to go and access specialist forensic examination and support was not a good position for women to be in. I think the fact that we have had the service up and running on the island for the last couple of years is important, but as Dan said, it's really important that we can provide the best possible service, because in the aftermath of that type of violent terrifying attack, it is absolutely understood that a victim may not be in a place where they wish to pursue a prosecution, but the ability to capture the evidence and obtain that and keep it to the point where somebody may feel able to support a police prosecution in due course is really, really important.
Okay, this is for, well, it says, can you ask Dan, but it's for both of you, really. In years gone by, if a trusted prisoner embarked on work outside the prison leading up to release, a proportion of the income was given to victim support. Now it's given to enablement services in the prison. The lack of practical assistance or support given to prisoners leaving prison is minimal. This is Texter 117. That's almost non-existent. My question is, who made the decision to stop paying any money to victim support and why? That was Lisa.
So there's a lot to unpack in there, isn't there? First of all, it's correct. So when prisoners go out to work in the community, a proportion of their salary is retained, and it is a fund that can be used to fund different things. So it's also important to say that the department currently funds victim support already to the tune of £77,000 a year, and that's to support victims of crime and support people going through the justice system. The 1 year we did give an amount of money to victim support for a specific project, and recently we have reinvested some of that money into tools for prisoners, for the community service team. So it just depends. We use it as and when. The decision's made collectively by the officers in the department alongside the prison management, and the prison management manage the fund on a day-to-day basis, but they may come up and say, we need to give some money to prisoners, to certain funds. I think there are services for offenders leaving prison, but it's not just a Department of Home Affairs issue. It's a broader social issue. There's an issue for housing. There's an issue of benefits. And, you know, as a community, we have to accept that offenders who come out of prison will go back into our community, and we need to do our best to support them, as well as making sure that victims of crime are supported as well.
OK, and the old favourite, Jane Paul Wilson, we often get asked this, why can't prisoners do manual work outside for other departments?
It's interesting you raise that, actually. I mean, I've been very interested to engage with our independent monitoring board who keep an eye on the prison for us and feedback. And one of their questions is, how can we increase the opportunities for prisoners? So we have actually got some work underway with our Office of Human Resources. And it's not just manual work. You know, people are interested in developing other skills, perhaps office-based skills and so on. So I think, you know, there's a realisation that it's important to look at what opportunities there are in different places, both within governments, but also to speak to private sector employers and see what opportunities there are there.
I think we probably also need to talk about the community service team, who go out and do great work in the community already. They go and support schools, local authorities, and they really do that community payback, and it's really visible and the results are great.
Okay. And again, this is the... just comes back to how you, how people who go to prison come out and then get back into society. Do you think everybody on the island understands that obviously we have to live with people who've been in prison, they've paid their debt to society, and for the majority of times they want to get on, they want to crack on with their lives. Do you think we as a society, in particular in an island situation, it's obviously more difficult because everything is magnified, people know. Do you think we've come to terms with that, Jane Paul Wilson?
I think it's a really, really good point that you're raising, Andy. And I think, you know, opportunities like we've got today to talk about this are important, because I think it is part of society coming to terms with that and realising, actually, yes, there is prison. It should be reserved for the most serious offences. But after people have served their tariff, they will come back into the community. Obviously, there will be varying conditions and so on that may apply to an individual depending on their offence and the circumstances, particularly if they're released on licence. But the critical thing is that we work hard, both within the prison system, but also within the probation service, to rehabilitate as best we can those individuals, councils. And then we work hard, as Dan touched on before, to try and support people as they leave the prison service. That's not just a Home Affairs issue for the reasons Dan touched on, but it is important that we recognise that some of the challenges that often lead to people going to prison, and it might be things, well, it classically is things like mental health concerns, addiction concerns, that we also continue to rehabilitate and support people so they can build a stake in society and they can make their contribution.
Okay, Jed, hi, you're live with Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis.
Oh, thank you very much, and good afternoon, Minister and Mr. Davis.
Hello, Jed.
And for the listeners, anyone who doesn't know me, I served in a most wonderful career in the Isle of Man Constabulary, and recommend it as one of the greatest jobs that you could ever have on this island. I do keep in touch with matters regarding policing, and something that's gathered my attention is the recent report from the His Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary. I take it, obviously, you're both aware of that, yeah?
Yes. Absolutely, Jed, yes.
Yeah. One of the recommendations which struck me was that by October 2023, the department should create an independent police complaints investigation process. So it's a question for the Minister, really. Why would Her Majesty's Inspectorate come up with this strong recommendation?
Oh, so Jed, I'm pleased you've asked about this. I think the department itself has recognised that there is improvement work that we need to do within the police complaints process, and indeed in scoping the inspection, one of the three areas that the department scoped with HMI was the governance arrangements for the constabulary. So it was absolutely recognised that we would need to have the inspection look at that and then look at what work we would need to do. So you're absolutely right, there are a series of recommendations that have come out of that inspection process, and work is underway to review various aspects of the police complaints process. You referenced the October 2023 date. We have actually set ourselves a target of December 2023, which is simply to recognise the work that we will need to undertake and the resource available. But I am absolutely committed to making sure that we do carry out this work now to improve our complaints, police complaints processes, in line with recommendations we've received. It's also true to say, and I think you probably are aware of this, Jed, that there has previously been some work done and extensive consultation on the nature of our police complaints process. So we won't want to reinvent the wheel, as it were. We will want to take stock of previous work that has been done, but position the police complaints process so that, you know, we iron out some of the irregularities that exist, and there are some technical irregularities between the various sets of regulations that apply, but also make sure it's accessible and workable for our people in society.
The response, though, from the department is that they've rejected the position of installing an independent police complaints commissioner. And really, I don't think that strikes very well, you know, in the terms of the actual report that was made. Would you agree with that?
It's probably important to say, Jed, that there already is an independent police complaints commissioner. What you're talking about, I think, is an entirely separate police ombudsman that handles the complaint itself.
So in answer to that, Dan, why did the report say it should create an independent police complaints process? That means that it's saying it's not independent at the moment.
I think there is an issue around the way that the police, the perception of the police complaints currently as constituted, is undertaken, and so there's some clarification around that process. But I think you have to be really conscious in a small jurisdiction about creating additional levels of bureaucracy and burden. I think there are things that need to be done in respect of the existing police complaints process, where the independent review highlighted some areas of concern around the difference between informal and formal complaints, which will be addressed. And also there's an issue around the way that complaints against the Chief Constable are currently handled, which we need to address. But I think the original Timwald Committee report into the complaint of Roy Redmayne in the Select Committee, which then resulted in a recommendation, the changes that were made by the department probably weren't, back in that time of the original report, weren't all brought into force. And I think with those changes, plus the changes that the department are going to make, you will have a good compromise between setting up a whole new office for police complaints and something that's more transparent and more subject to openness and scrutiny.
I think it's also important to say that as we draw up the changes that we want to make, we will, of course, consult on them. So there will absolutely be an opportunity for some consultation on the proposed changes as we bring them forward.
I think the perception will be, though, is that that recommendation has been rejected, and that unless you make some very strong statements, the public will just believe that the police continue to investigate themselves.
Well, I think it's very, very important to highlight that the process here is that there is a police standards officer, and those investigations are conducted by police standards in many cases. I think we have probably no more than about 10 complaints a year, but that there is supervision by the Independent Police Complaints Commissioner. And it will be really important to me and to the department that we involve our Independent Police Complaints Commissioner in this review and making changes, because I think you're right, Jed, it's important that there is assurance both for me as the minister and the department, but also for the wider public, that we do have a proper and robust complaints process that is independently overseen.
Okay, all right. Jed, before you go, just tell me what was so brilliant about being a policeman on the Isle of Man?
You could achieve things very quickly, solve community issues, you'd have great intelligence with the Manx public, and you could make things happen, and you could make a national difference, quite simple. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. And like I said, I'd recommend the job to anyone.
OK, thanks, Jed.
Thanks, Jed.
Thanks, Jed.
All right, good to hear from you. And David's with us now on Man in Line. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy and guests. A couple of things I want to run past them and then I'll disappear. One is community policing. How do we evaluate that as a department now on community policing? Do the department look at, do the population feel more comfortable with community policing, or do we want more community policing, or is it ineffectual? That was one. The other one is down to community service and a great initiative that was done years ago when the community service groups came out and did work for, not for local authorities or government departments, they should be funding it themselves, but to help those people in the community who may be struggling, who are on their own, and sometimes want a garden cut or a hedge trimmed before they get prosecuted.
Okay, thanks very much, David. On your first question about community policing, that it is, you're right, neighbourhood community policing is an important facet of what the constabulary do, and it's certainly a priority in terms of the policing plan and something that we will emphasise. I think the evaluation point is really important. So one of the ways in which we try and understand how successful it is there is engagement annually by the constabulary with all the local authorities, so there is a route to get some information that way. I think there is another mechanism, which is the constabulary inclusion scrutiny group, which has representation from a wide variety of different organisations that are very much based in the community. But I think we were talking before about the HMI report into the constabulary, and one of the things that we are mindful of looking at over the course of this year, certainly before we do the 24-25 policing plan, is how we best improve the levels of public engagement feedback into the department so that we have some sense of, you know, are people feeling, as you said, it's safer in their communities? Do they feel that the community policing is working well for them? So I think it's a good question, and I think it's one that we are interested in developing out further.
In terms of community service, we'll absolutely take that away. I think that sometimes the work done by community service teams is really appreciated. I hear what you say about the local authority, but sometimes it's also about being seen to give back to the community where there's been harm caused. But there's no reason why we shouldn't look at that.
Okay, all right, David, thanks for that.
Cheers, bye.
All right, 26 minutes past 12 on Meg's Radio. There's just a quick one I want to get to, and then we need to move on. I wonder what the Minister think of the current infrastructure that emergency services have to operate from. Facilities are showing their age. Are they really fit for purpose? I remember, Jane Paul Wilson, you said that the fire station was going.
I think your questioner is right that, you know, that there are our infrastructure is increasingly aged, and it's not just its physical state. There are also challenges about supporting a modern service today. For example, you know, enabling more women firefighters and so on, you have to develop your facilities to enable that. But a piece of work that we are undertaking this year is around the blue light strategy, and that is to look at the modernisation of our emergency services in the broadest possible sense. So to look at the future demand profile, but also where the scope for collaboration, and we may get on and talk about some of how the profile of service demand is changing, actually. But through that, once we understand how the services may be able to collaborate more closely and work together, there is an opportunity to look at how we best develop our future infrastructure around that. So the strategy will ultimately inform plans for how we can improve our infrastructure on a planned basis moving forward.
Okay, we're live with Department of Justice and Home Affairs today on Man in Line.
Island Hearing Limited, your local hearing care specialist since 2009, with branches in Port Erin and Ramsey. We provide the very latest hearing aid technology available, which you can try at home, with excellent aftercare and a wax removal service available using microsuction. Give us a ring on 830 722 or visit Island Hearing at 1 Station Road, Port Erin. We're happy to help. Island Hearing, always listening.
We all use technology in our cars and homes. Why wouldn't you embrace it for running your business? At Nicola Bowker & Co., we help you understand the latest business tech, allowing you to spend more time running your business. Nicola Bowker & Co.
Morning, let's get this Island Fuels show on the road. Bye, see you next time. That's the Jackson household topped up for winter. All done, that's the school heating sorted, and a few more homes. A nice bit of lunch, then back to the depot. So, it's the plant and machinery this afternoon, and a couple of farms out in the sticks later. Ready for home now, good job done.
Trust Island Fuels for great service, well delivered. Order today. Call Island Fuels on 247 645.
Heard the goss? You've another chance to win with Millie Chaps of Ramsey. We've got some new celebs in a bed. Call in at Parliament Street and see if you can identify the famous people. Text their names and your name to 166177, starting your message with the word bed. All correct entries will go into the big prize draw live on Manx Radio at the end of the month to win an incredible bed worth £500. And be sure to check out Millie Chaps' extensive bed range at the island's only Temper Collection studio. Celebs in a bed, again, with Millie Chaps of Ramsey and your nation station, Manx Radio.
A rejuvenated FC Isle of Man are back on Manx shores once again this weekend, and they'll be able to continue their recent good run under the floodlights in Douglas. The Ravens welcome Longridge Town to the bowl in the NWCFL Premier Division this Saturday, with both teams vying for vital results to secure their safety. Join me, Rob Pritchard and Tony Meppen for FC Isle of Man versus Longridge Town, kicking off at 6 p.m. this Saturday. Manx Radio will be providing full live match commentary on our AM 1368 and digital platforms. Live coverage of FC Isle of Man on Manx Radio is supported by Selton, investing in our community.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint. Man in
Line! Jane Paul Wilson, MHK, the Minister, and Dan Davis, Chief Executive here from Home Affairs today. And I have to put to both of you something we've had quite a lot of correspondence on, and it's regarding suicides at the prison. Is there anything you can say about that, Minister?
Andy, it's something that I know Dan and the department take extremely seriously. I'm afraid it isn't something that I can comment on, though, because there is a coronial process that this is subject to. So I'm afraid I can't comment. But it is a matter we take extremely seriously. And when we are able to comment, then we absolutely will do to explain how the prison service and the department will will respond appropriately.
Okay. There's been a recent case also of sentencing delayed because a vulnerable defendant didn't have secure accommodation to go to when released from custody. What's going to happen in those particular situations?
Again, these are very difficult circumstances. I think the issue we have is that where people have vulnerabilities and needs that go beyond the ability of the department to meet, we are really keen to work with partners. So the Department of Home Affairs, for example, has involvement with the Housing and Communities Board to look at housing provision and support for people with different vulnerabilities and so on. That might be in the context of actually leaving prison, but it could also be in the case that you've referenced. And it is important that we work hard with partners to try and make sure that appropriate service and support is offered.
Dan Davis, do we have a bail hostel?
We do, yeah. We have a bail hostel in Tramode, and I think it's a real success story actually for the department. So we took over running the provision of bail facilities about 4 years ago. It was originally done by the Salvation Army at David Gray House, and they did a fantastic job. But at the end, I think the Salvation Army in the UK it didn't really fit the profile of the things that they did more broadly in the UK. So the department took the decision to run it in-house, and now we house 12 people. We have a higher risk threshold for offenders coming out of prison, and we have a great team of people who work really hard with the people we have in there. I think it's important as well to say that when people come out of prison, sometimes they may be on a licence which requires them to have either an address at the bail hostel, particularly for serious and violent offenders. When they come out of prison, they will be required to spend a certain amount of time at the bail hostel, and that's to understand their risk, that's to understand how they're going to integrate back into the community, and allows us to monitor their progress. They also, if an offender is released without a requirement to go to the bail hostel, they may have a requirement to go to a suitable address. And sometimes if there isn't a suitable address, they can't be released from prison because they will immediately fail the test of their licence condition. But the staff in the hostel work really, really hard. And in fact, we had a recent case where an offender had been released from prison 6 months ago. They had nowhere to go. They couldn't find suitable accommodation. They were vulnerable. They had a number of issues, but actually this offender had turned their life around. They dealt with their addiction. They did got support for their mental health issues, and they had a job, but they couldn't find any accommodation. And so the bail hostel actually accommodated them for 6 months, and they've just found accommodation. But it's a broader issue than just the Department of Home Affairs, and it is something the Housing and Community Board looks at, because if you leave prison and you don't have settled accommodation, you don't have support, you don't have a job, frankly, you're going to reoffend.
And I'd just like to pick up, actually, Andy, that recent example. I'd like to pay tribute to the bail hostel workers who have absolutely gone above and beyond to support the particular individual. And I think it's made a real difference to that individual as well. They feel like somebody cares and has worked to support them in turning their life around.
Okay, now go to Keyboard Warriors. Here's a message in that just says, what's the situation? What's being done about people who write scandalous and false accusations about people, respectable, innocent people, normally in the middle of the night, and then perhaps change their name on Facebook and start up with something else? Whose responsibility is that? Is that police? What happens?
It's an extremely difficult area, actually, to regulate social media, isn't it? Because there's the issue of defamation, obviously. So when people are posting false information, it's the ability to demonstrate the falseness of that, but also from an enforcement perspective. I mean, it's incredibly difficult if people can change their profile and disappear and close down accounts. So I think it is a police matter, but it is not an easy matter of enforcement in practice.
The Isle of Man lives on Facebook, Dan.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, there have been prosecutions in the past for people, and in addition to that, at the more incredibly serious end of things, the department, through the Justice Reform Act, introduced criminal provisions for harassment and stalking. And so where people are subject to that kind of consistent behaviour, then there are now criminal provisions in place. But it's incredibly difficult to police, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because people say stuff that they wouldn't say to somebody's face in the pub.
No, never.
It's astonishing,
no.
Really.
And I think actually, Andy, just to think about another angle. I mean, one of the issues that I've received some feedback on around, criminal activities or charges of criminal activity is the issue of anonymity of suspects. Mm-hmm. And I think one of my concerns is, it is something I've committed to consult on in due course, but one of my broader concerns is even where we do already have restricted reporting, for example, with juveniles in our justice system, unfortunately, social media activity quite often is instrumental in revealing who these young people are. So it is an incredibly concerning thing that people act irresponsibly on social media and cause significant harm for a number of reasons.
Okay, let's come to something that I know you'll both be troubled by, and that is budget. And it concerns the Chief Constable warned last year, Max dropped a note in just to say, the Chief Constable warned last year that the drug wipe and everything and forensics was putting pressure on their budget as well. Max notes that, and I don't, he's obviously reading a lot more than me, it cost £600 per drug test, but he says that the offender only pays £125 in prosecution costs. Why don't they just put the costs up?
So this is an issue that we are...
Is it £600?
It's a substantial amount.
It's about that.
It is an issue that we are aware of, and I think there are various ways we can try and tackle this. So one of the interesting things is, of course, as technology and science develops and changes, the type of test that you could conduct also changes. But actually, we've provided in our legislation for a specific way of testing. So one of the routes we can pursue is to look at whether we can adapt legislation. Now, our road legislation is actually owned by the Department of Infrastructure. So that would be a piece of work where Home Affairs would look to engage with infrastructure and see if we can make some changes, which would help us just bring the cost down if we could change the test.
Are there more drug driving cases than drink driving cases, Dan?
I think that's been the case lately, yes, definitely. The police have really used the powers since they were introduced at the start of the year, and they find that there are a prolific number of particularly younger people who choose to drive while they're under the influence of drugs.
So if it's costing £600 for the drugs wipe and everything, and £125 in prosecution costs, it's costing the department £475.
Yeah, and there is precedent in the UK where a judge, I think, has ruled that you cannot claim back the costs of the investigation of a case, only the costs of prosecuting the case, if that makes sense. So it's unlikely the department will be able to recover the full costs. But I think if you look at the cost of a road traffic collision, actually, the benefit to society of taking people off the roads who believe that it's okay to drive while under the influence of any form of substance, you know, it's around about £2.2 million, the cost of a fatality in a road traffic collision. So in those ways, the department, I think, is bringing a broader benefit to society.
Okay. What's the Garnier report?
Yes, this was the report that was the department commissioned into a review of legal services on the Isle of Man for reasons that we have not been able to control, which is to do with the reviewers and health reasons. That actually has been slightly delayed in terms of the department actually receiving the report. But we are in regular contact with the reviewer and receiving updates. And I am absolutely committed to this report coming forward and seeing the recommendations and then doing the work to implement it. I hope it will be within the coming couple of months now that we will be able to receive that report.
Okay, two very quick questions. When does Russ Foster start?
1st of April.
Okay.
He's already in post as the Deputy Chief Constable.
Okay. And secondly, as well, I noted on the government website today that the Chief Fire Officer's job is being advertised as well.
That's right.
And £112,088 per year. That's the going rate, is it, for a Chief Fire Officer?
In fact, there are four bands of Chief Fire Officer grade, and this is the lowest band, so it matches that you'd find from a Chief Fire Officer from a smaller community in the United Kingdom. But the Chief Fire Officer has an incredibly difficult role. They control seven stations right across the Isle of Man. They have a team of just 153 retained and whole-time firefighters to keep the Isle of Man safe. And they do not just putting out fires, they do road traffic collisions, they provide first responder for the ambulance in certain situations, they carry out rescue and support. And in the event of a major incident, the chief fire officer would be a gold commander. And it's a really, really responsible role that we need to make sure that we pay appropriately and we pay equivalently to that you find in the UK.
Okay. Will there be preference given to off-island or on-island?
I think it's about the best person for the role, which would always be the situation. And I think we touched on the blue light strategy earlier, Andy. I think one of the other things we expect of our chief fire officer is to work proactively to develop a community management risk safety plan for the future and to contribute strategically to the development of that blue light strategy. So it's absolutely about command and the skills to actually lead the fire service. But that leadership also is about the strategic future for the Isle of Man and provision of emergency services.
OK, we're live with the Department of Home Affairs through till 1. Lots of messages to get through between now and then. If you want to get in touch, text, email, call or WhatsApp.
Ethel Garage in Ballasalla doesn't just service and repair any make or model of car. They also operate a recovery vehicle to rescue you and your vehicle from anywhere on the island.
See? Aren't you glad we went to Ethel?
For top quality work from Nissan factory trained technicians, dedicated aftercare, and now recovery too. Ethel, a garage to swear by, not swear at. Book now at Ethel.im or call the A-team whenever you need them. 820082.
Ramsey, Douglas, Castletown and Peel. The ferry bridge and Laxey Wheel. Point of air to the sound of man. Explore the island with Camperman. Whether it's an island staycation, a trip to the UK or a tour of Europe, do it in style with Camperman Luxury Motorhome Hire. Fabulous accommodation, the open road and stunning views await you. Start planning your dream adventure. Call Camperman Luxury Motorhome Hire now on 304087 or find us on Facebook.
Meet the team at the fish market at Robinson's. There's Jay, one of only 17 master fishmongers in the world. Jordan, a young fishmonger of the year 2019. Stefan's our resident chef, while Sean creates amazing bespoke seafood platters. And keeping them all in line, Alison, bringing 30 years of experience to the team. The fish market at Robinson's, Cool Road, Braddon. A proper fishmonger, where nothing is too much trouble.
You may have already heard about the new energy efficiency scheme, but you may not know just how easy it is to access the support and that more of you can apply for it. You could be eligible for £750 worth of free energy efficiency materials to make your home more energy efficient, reduce your energy consumption, and to help lower bills. Check out our website today and find out if your household is eligible. Go online to costoflivingsupport.gov.im or call 686262.
Shh! Mum's the word. And this weekend we've teamed up with the cast and crew from the Manx Operatic Society show Annie Get Your Gun to give you a chance to win two tickets for you and your mum to see the show next week. All you need to do is play along with Mum's the Word on our Facebook page and identify our mum movies. Text your answer starting your message with mum to 166177. Don't forget to include your name. Mum's the Word this Mother's Day with the Manx Operatic Society and your nation station, Manx Radio.
Alex, your tea's ready.
Thanks, Mum.
This is the Isle of Man talking, the man in line.
Faster Mike, good afternoon with Jane Paul Wilson, MHK, and Dan Davis on Manx Radio. We're looking at the Department of Home Affairs. Alan is with us live now. Hi, Alan, you're live with the Minister and the Chief Exec.
Hello, Miss Peel Wilson. It's Alan Shea calling. I'm really thankful to say thank you to the Isle of Man Police Force, because last week, obviously there's a big debate going on about sex education, I got a threatening message on Facebook. Someone was threatening me, and the police did a brilliant job in doing what they could. But then the guy just deleted his Facebook page so the police could actually trace him. But they were very professional how they dealt with everything. So I just would like to say a big thank you to the Manx Police Force.
Well, Alan, I'm really pleased to hear that. I mean, I think we all know we can be very quick to criticise, can't we? So it's really, really heartening to hear that the constabulary responded so well. And you and I both know, because we've talked about it and we've considered it long and hard, that that's such a change from how things were decades ago. And I'm pleased to hear it.
Yeah, they phoned me up every day and kept me informed what was going on. So it's a big shout out to the Manx Police, because he did a brilliant job.
Okay, right. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate that. Across the water, last time you were on, Jane Paul Wilson, we talked about the fact that Merseyside drugs gangs' tentacles reach onto the Isle of Man, and the fact that organised crime is. And it's tempting, really, for the general public, for the man and woman in the street, to think that there isn't much crime on the Isle of Man. But, I mean, across the water, in Liverpool, something like 94 rapes a month, 340 crimes a day go into the call centres in Liverpool. How much of that Liverpudlian crime is coming to the Isle of Man, and whereabouts is it?
So I think it is important to say that the Isle of Man remains a very safe place. I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's also true to say that for most people, they would not appreciate some of the harms and risks that we do face from serious and organised crime activity, particularly from Merseyside, but not exclusively. And I'm afraid it is mainly around drug importation and drug dealing and drug debts. I think there are all manner of harms and problems that become associated with that. Most worryingly, I think, for people on Ireland is the exploitation of vulnerable people in that context. So the constabulary work very hard. I mean, there has been a reasonable amount of press coverage over the last few months about successful operations where the constabulary have managed to arrest and successfully prosecute a number of people who are now serving offences. But the people who ultimately control and manage this trade are not typically based on the Isle of Man. They are based on the adjacent island. And so the constabulary continue to work very hard with partners in Merseyside and elsewhere to share intelligence and to work very hard to address this problem and keep us safe.
It's a really, really lucrative market for drug dealers, and so they see the Isle of Man as a place where they can charge more for drugs because it's a constricted supply. The police do work really, really hard, and I know the new Chief Constable, Russ Foster, has a background in organised crime, and he has already said he intends to continue to challenge those groups of people. But as the minister said, the real risk of harm is from violence, where drug debts get settled, but also from the exploitation of vulnerable people who might be coerced into carrying drugs or receiving cash. And so it's important to work with them as victims. And the minister has sponsored a report into the harm caused by illicit drugs in the Isle of Man by Liverpool John Moores University, which we hope will report probably towards the end of June this year.
And in fact, actually, it's probably worth saying there will be some publicity around that, I think, in the coming weeks, because Liverpool John Moores will want to do some focus groups and some surveys of the population here on that topic.
I know you're normally not judgmental, Jane Paul Wilson, but I'll ask you to be. And what advice would you give to parents and carers of young people when it comes to drugs?
I think it's education. I mean, I've got sons myself, and I think it's about really educating people about how easy it is to be lulled, whether it's through the offer of material goods or cash, or these people are not your friends. And I think we have to have proper, honest, open conversations with our children and keep having them to understand that these are not nice people. And it is what looks like something that could be potentially harmless. It actually causes huge, huge harm in practice in terms of people who are exploited and caught up in this trade. I think there's another worry that when we look at a drug like cocaine, which I think still is perceived in many quarters as an acceptable,
trendy
drug. Again, if you look at the what goes on to supply that drug and the harm that is caused to people in that chain, you would not do it. So I think it is about having, it's fully about education, being alert, talking to our children, taking care of them, but also trying to take care of our more vulnerable citizens as well.
Okay, we're live with Home Affairs and more messages coming in. We're hoping to get, by the way, somebody's asking when the Chief Constable's going to be. Gary Roberts was going to be coming on Man in Line, but I think he stepped away from media attention coming to the end of his term as Chief Constable. But we've asked Russ Foster in, and I think he'll be with us before the end of the year, hopefully, so we can hear what Russ Foster has to say. I mentioned just regarding the Isle of Man prison, do you ever get any criticism about it being too soft?
I don't think I've heard that particular criticism, actually, no. I mean, I think people often can have a perception of what being incarcerated involves. And I think I've obviously visited the prison on a number of occasions in my capacity as minister. I think to lose your freedom is significant. I think it also does say, though, that you know, prisons should be reserved for the most severe offences, in my view. There are ways, I think, of addressing offending behaviour that can involve limiting people's freedom and rights, and we do have a project ongoing around.
Do you think there are too many people in prison?
I think,
or people who should have other sanctions against them rather than incarceration.
So I think we are conscious of some interesting work that is underway, because we have specialist forensic psychologists in place up at the prison, and we are conscious that the profile of our prison population tells us that a substantial number of people have mental health concerns and also addiction, drugs related offences. So the question then has to be, actually, are there other ways, are there other problem-solving ways to either try and make sure that people don't offend in the first place, or if they do offend, that we try and get to the bottom of what's driving that offending behaviour and address it appropriately? It's difficult for me to say whether at any one time there are too many or not enough people in prison. I think what we do have to work on is, actually, do we understand what causes offending behaviour, and are we pitching our interventions to change that offending behaviour appropriately?
Would you care to tell us anything about the work that's ongoing about?
Well, I think it is about, I think there are many facets to it. So I think the review that we're doing into the illicit harms caused by drugs on the Isle of Man, I think, tells us something about, you know, where it's drug use for personal use, how are we addressing that? I think where we are looking at people with addiction and other mental health problems, how do we support those people before we get to the point of criminalising them?
Yeah.
So it's a complex area. There are no quick fixes, I think it's fair to say, but that's not to say we shouldn't be trying. And we are committed to reviewing our criminal justice strategy this year, which was drawn up in 2012, because that was also about the right type of response to particular offences. So we want to look at that again and look at whether we actually are, whether we do have an appropriate suite of responses to different offending behaviour.
I had questions in from several parents over the past few days saying, is it right for a 16-year-old to get a criminal record for a little bit of weed?
And I think these are probably the issues that are kind of going to come out with the work that we've commissioned with Liverpool John Moores. And actually, yes, how do you, when you look at the harms caused by drugs, there's the risk of criminality, but there's also the health aspects of it. And I think, you know, that's why these are complex areas, because I think you have to look at the entirety of the potential harms and then try and pitch your responses appropriately.
I think it's probably, Andy, also important to say that in most cases, I think if a 16-year-old is stopped with a little bit of weed, they won't immediately receive a criminal charge. There's a drug arrest referral scheme in relation to the constabulary which they operate, and there are levels. So if somebody has gone to a prison for a small amount of weed, as you describe it, it's unlikely it's a first offence.
Okay, we've only got about a minute left, so if you could be brief on this. With 15,000 additional people that government's hoping to attract by 2037, will the prison be able to cope with any additional offenders who are convicted on the island from this figure, Jane Paul Wilson?
I'm not concerned about that, actually, because we are under capacity generally at the prison. So I think we can have up to 138 people at any one time in the layout of the prison. We tend to operate, I do see the figures every day, but we are typically under 100 at any one time. So I'm not particularly concerned that we would have a problem.
And some more. I'll get to some more as well. This is just regarding, it's a very big subject, which we wouldn't do justice to in 30 seconds as well. Do you think decriminalising cannabis would put a stop to a lot of the problems?
So I think this is absolutely back to what we've just been touching on about this review we're doing into the harms caused by illicit substances. I think the issue, and I don't want to preempt it because we will bring forward sort of policy responses in due course, but questions that would immediately come up in my mind are, if you decriminalise but you don't regulate, those serious and organised crime gangs still have the desire to exploit and use the market for what's still an illegal substance in the Isle of Man. So you would still have the problems that are associated with the importation of what would still be an illegal substance.
Well, it seems like we're doing nothing but talk about drugs for the past hour, Dan Davis. We've not even touched on the probation service or emergency planning or civil defence, so I'll do what I normally do is say, will you come back again?
We will,
definitely.
All right, thanks for being with us today. Jane Paul Wilson, the Minister, the MHK, Dan Davis, the Chief Exec of the Home Affairs Department. Thanks for all your messages. Didn't have time to read everything out, but we will read everything, certainly, and thanks for being in touch. I'm away for a couple of weeks, so be nice to Beth. She's going to be on Man in Line for 2 weeks, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks' time.
WINT